Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Yes, we are live now, and we'll be playing from Monday with Kevin at the end of today's program. Of course, yes, I have a tee time. Golf tournament I'm playing in today, so there you go. You can't change those around too much, right? So I appreciate it if you were tuning in to hear that. We'll be doing it later. We're just doing it in the reverse, okay? Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net if you prefer email. You know, yesterday we did a Zoom meeting with clients, and I kind of did a market update. But there were a couple things I wanted to kind of share with you. And when I say market update, I know that just... I just became bored saying that, okay? So it's not something we talk a lot about, is like, what do we think the market's going to do? That's, as you well know, if you've listened at all to this program, I don't believe that at all. You know, who cares what the market does day to day? Most of the time, it's wrong. It's literally, they're going to tell you something that they're completely making up. Completely making up, right? Yeah, because we have to have a reason to exist, meaning, you know, the business news can't exist. If, in fact, there's, like, you get on there and you go, well, the market moved a little bit today. That's it. It did a little squiggle, like it usually does. Most days are just a little squiggle. Thanks for tuning in. That's the end of it. There's nothing else there. They have to come with, you know, breathing hard, leaning into the microphone. It's, oh, my gosh, this is oil prices. Oh, my gosh, the Fed did this and that. I mean, it's just like, oh, the drama. Right? And of course, everybody is becoming so screaming and yelling for everybody's attention that we lose any kind of importance in what's going on in the market. What's going on in the market? We're reopening. That's what's going on. We're reopening. So mostly, most days, we are moving towards our all-time highs, or actually into all-time highs. When we have a little bit of a correction because nothing goes straight up, then you can have all kinds of hyperventilating about growth concerns, the Delta variant, and all these things are just going to, like, oh, give me that list. What are the 10 problem things here? Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. All right. So the market went down, you know, 0.13% today. That's not doing anything. But you would think, well, we took to traders today and the on inflation concerns, valuation concerns, the Delta variant, and what's going on with China. You would think the market was down thousands of points on incredible worries. So the reality is none of that is true. Markets don't do that. They just don't. But at any rate, what I wanted to kind of talk about was the fact of these two major things that everybody's worried about. Valuations. Hear it all the time. Hear it every single day. Well, isn't the market too high? Well, of course, if you sit around and read how the market is too high, you would have not invested since Dow 10,000. True story, actually, you never would have invested because there's always somebody out there telling you how it's about to crash. Why? Because fear sells. Fear sells. In the midst of a pandemic in 2020, the S&P was up 17%. Yes, that included the downtime. But you wouldn't know that by the press. You most certainly wouldn't know it by the safest money or safer money or guarantee money, however you want to phrase it. It's always going to crash. The sky is always falling. That crowd is always there to separate you from your money. They always are. And they always have been. It just didn't always look like this. It looked like something like the gold bugs in the early 80s. It looked like the energy people in the late 80s, when all you wanted to do was own oil wells. And then it looked like limited partnerships, right? Real estate limited partnerships in the late 80s, early 90s. It always looks like something. You just have to avoid that market, the casino, if you will. And of course, as we look at it and we realize that the long-term nature of it is that nothing else is better than it, has not come close, and playing games doesn't work, let's take a look at valuations just for a second and think about it. Are the valuations too high? So as we look at it, and I don't have charts to show you because guess what? This is called radio. And so we as you can visualize, the price-to-earnings ratios are fairly high compared to the norm historically. But then you flip it over and you say, how are corporate profits doing? They're doing incredibly well. We look like we're going to go up literally 70%. I didn't misstate that. 70% this quarter from a year ago. Yeah, pandemic bottom, all that. I get it. Big rise. But we're looking for more gains all the rest of the year as the economy continues to open up. And it's not just here. It's all around the world. You know, I know you hear constantly that, of course, the rich countries like the United States that invented, of course, the vaccines, how awful and evil we are that we don't give all those vaccines away and immunize our own people first. But we did, but there's still leftovers, and those are going around the world. Distribution's hard. In a third world country, it's almost impossible, right? Because the rich are going to take all of them. The connected are going to take them all. That's it. So, but we're getting there. And what we keep forgetting is we're getting there. We're getting there. And every single day, if you're an editor of a newspaper or an online thing, you got to come up with the disaster of the day every single day or people won't listen. So what are they going to be talking about? How good it's going? No. Anything they can find wrong, a little fly in the ointment, right? Any little thing, that's what they're going to beat up on every single day and turn it into a crisis. But GDP growth all around the world, this is just a simple fact. It's booming. It's booming in the United States. It's booming in Europe. It's booming in emerging markets. It's booming. So we're opening up and booming. Consumer spending. We just had numbers here yesterday. That's not just here, though. It's all around the world. It's booming. And sometimes, as I often say, right, sometimes you just say, this is good news, period. You don't comma but it. You don't say, this is good news, but the Delta variant is what's wrong. It's just period. And it helps us really understand what's going on. So are valuations too high? No, not in a boom. They're not. Not with interest rates near zero. They're not. There's still $13 trillion invested in negative interest rates. Can you imagine that? Negative interest rate. $13 trillion. This is not a small number that's willing to do that. That's fear. That's weird fear. I am willing to put money in, say, cash at zero in the United States. And lots of people are going, uh-huh, yeah, I am. Because I'm telling you what, world's upside down. Obama's policies are this. We have inflation there. Go on and on and on. But I'm telling you, if you are a manager of billions of dollars, it's okay if you have your personal money that says, I am going to lose money every year to inflation. I'm going to hand back less to you as a money manager, and you need to pay me. You can do that on your own personal money. You can say, I want to lose money every year with my money. That's my objective. But if you are managing a pension fund, an endowment, mutual funds, etc., you're an investment manager. You, in other words, the market predominantly, you can't do that. You can't approach the investment committee and say, yeah, I'm so scared, I want to lose 3 or 4% a year to inflation for you. Oh, thank you. That's a great job. How much do we owe you for your great management skills? So the answer is no money can be, or limited money can be in cash. How about those bonds at 1.3% 10-year treasury? Again, below the inflation rate. So I'm going to put all that money in treasuries so that 10 years from now, I can guarantee to give you less back. Not going to work. Not going to work at all. So where is money finding itself going? To where it's treated best, like always. Always. So if inflation was super high, like, and we'll come to inflation in a moment, like it was when I started in the industry in the 1980s, super high. Stock market didn't do very well. And because inflation was so high, government bonds were paying up to, at one time, no kidding, 16%. They're all gone now because the 30-year period is expired. But for 6 months, rates were that high on government bonds. In other words, people said, okay, if you're going to give me 16% guaranteed, I'll take it. Money flows where it is treated the best. Right now, and for the longest time, stocks are the only game in town. Interest rates are just too low. You can't get a return even above inflation, let alone taxes, and a real return in anything but. That's where we're at. So when people talk about valuations, compared to what? Compared to cash earning zero? Compared to what? Compared to a time when stock price to earnings ratios or book values, or however you want to talk about it, price to sales, when interest rates were at 6 or 8%, that time? That is not this time? We can all make things up. Statistics lie, liars use statistics. But here's, I think sometimes we just have to stop and go, this is why the market is working. This is why, if you outthink it, you're wrong. Don't. Stop it. Nobody knows what the future is going to be. If Joe Biden became president, the market would tank. But it didn't. But that was because the Senate would never become blue. But it did. Well, I don't know, but I'm never wrong, so let me double down on the same things I've said for the last 15 years. That's not learning anything. Look, valuations are high historically. That's it. We can comma butt it to death. But interest rates are really low and so on. I just covered it. So we all get it, but there are the run of the reasons why valuations are high is because they deserve to be high. Flat out. Would I rather buy J.P. Morgan again, like a year ago at $100 a share, even down to 90, than 150 today? Yeah, but I can't do that. Pandemic's over. Is J.P. Morgan a good value at 150? I think so, compared to cash, for sure. Compared to bonds, are you kidding me? I'll take the 2.5%, 3% dividend that they raise every year. And the billions, my share of the billions of dollars that they make every quarter. The second thing I want to cover real quick before we take our break. Inflation. Everybody's talking about inflation. Is it transient, meaning temporary? Is it permanent? What part? Here's two things I'm going to give you. I'm concerned about the fact that it is permanent in some ways. Permanently high, super high? No. No. But when you raise money supply, I know it's a big word and lots of people's eyeballs just spun back in their head. Money supply is simply this: how much money I have in my checking account, bank account, pocket. Okay? Just cash. We have so much of it now. We are up 30%. Okay, so that's just a number. Okay, you want to be in the finance business or commentary business? Here's what you do. You throw out lots of numbers. No context, of course. Just say, this is up 30%. Those down 10. No, I don't know what we're going to do about the yen-euro currency hedging thing. I mean, you toss out big, big phrases like that. Here's what it means, 30%. We've never done this before. That's how big a deal it is. We've not done this before. That's a concern. How do you undo 30% increase in money when you haven't increased the supply? So demand is kind of sort of up 30%. But on top of that, what you've done also with the supply chain in the world is you've not just had, let's call it, you're buying wood, okay? And so you're going to buy $10 worth of wood. Now you have $13 with a 30% money supply increase. Here's the problem. With the supply chain closed down, we don't have 10 feet of wood anymore. We don't have 10 board feet. We have like 8. We've cut back. So now we have more money chasing even fewer in the supply chain. That will catch up. That's the part that's transient. The problem is the 30% money supply is not going away. It's there. So we're into a whole new experiment. Does that mean disaster? If I want to, I can sell a newsletter talking about disaster. Lots of people do. I don't think it's a disaster, but I do think that we've moved away from zero inflation. And we now are going to have to deal with it. And the Federal Reserve is wrong in saying it's all transient. It's not all transient. Some of it is. Some of this is temporary, as we're seeing lumber prices down 70%. 70%, right? Okay? So some of the things are getting better, but the reality is we've amped it up. Those are the two worries, and I just don't see him being anything to be all fussed about right now. I just don't. It just doesn't make any sense. And markets are wrong. Market commentators are wrong all the time. Now, they pretend not to be, because you can comment one way today and one way tomorrow, the opposite, and you're always right, because all you're doing is commenting on what already happened. It doesn't do any good, except it frightens people. And that's why we talk about it all the time. Quit letting it frighten you. Markets don't do anything of any consequence almost every day. Almost every single day. The value of Apple, for example, goes up a little bit every day. But the stock price doesn't. The value of Amazon is increasing a little bit every day. Not a lot some days and a little other days. That's stock prices. But if the underlying businesses are becoming more and more and more profitable, why wouldn't people pay more for them in the long run? If the income from, say, J.P. Morgan is increasing every year, or Pfizer, or Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, the list goes on, why over time wouldn't people pay for a rising stream of income that rises faster than the rate of inflation? Or do you think they're going to keep their money at zero? They're going to move it. This is what we do. Stock prices and value are disconnected often. Often. I'll talk a little bit about how wrong, for example, commentary about interest rates are in a moment. But right now, I got to take a quick break. It's 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Yes, we are live. We've reversed everything around. Kevin Miller and I will be discussing the markets and stuff at the end of the second hour. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-KIDO, 580-5436. That's our number. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Terry. Terry, thanks for calling. Good.
Well, good morning, Professor. How are you doing?
Good morning, Terry. I'm doing well.
Well, I can tell you that the country is in fine shape. Just traveled from here to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and back, and at least in the West and the South, people are happy and out busy doing things and having fun.
Apparently not. You did not go through California.
I won't go to California ever again in my lifetime if I'm lucky.
Yeah, gosh, I can't believe they locked down again. But anyway, I digress. Yeah, well, I'm glad you're back safely, Terry.
Well, thank you. And like I told Erica the other day, that Yoplait yogurt has Starburst flavored yogurt.
Well, of course they do. Why wouldn't somebody come up with an absolutely ludicrous new flavor? Because we don't have enough.
It tastes really good, and is this a great world or what?
It is. I know. It's right. It's unlimited, right? It's unlimited.
Oh, I was out, going through news feeds and whatnot this morning, and I saw a thing that said there might be a Social Security cost of living increase of 6.1%, depending on what happens in the next couple of months and how the Department of whoever fudges the numbers and whatnot. But they came up, the article had a thing in there that there's an idea being floated out there about a CPIE, or elderly cost of living. And I'm wondering, are we, with all the divisions everybody wants and everybody expects the other half of the world to be butthurt about what they're trying to do, why can't these wizards of smart try to make something that's better for everybody instead of trying to single out one group or one little group? And, you know, millennials and young kids are going to be upset about, you know, the old folks getting extra. It's finally going to come to a head, I think.
It probably should, to a degree, Terry. We've become super divided in this country, but one of the things that we never really deal with, I talk about it all the time, of course, you've heard me say it, but we've got to deal with the moral issue of piling debt on the future generations. At some point, believe it or not, I mean, I got to believe that the younger generation that is thinking it's a great idea to vote with leftist viewpoints and bury themselves in further debt, as insane as that sounds, that's who predominantly is doing it. But that, you know, that kind of progressive agenda, we don't even talk about what it's doing to future generations. And I do believe they are going to rebel at some point in time. Further, we just won't deal with Social Security and the fact that people won't die. They just won't die. Social Security was set up that almost no man made it to age 65. And it wasn't for women because it was only working men at that time. So don't think I'm being sexist here. I'm not. It's just it was men, and men didn't live to age 65. I believe it was 1 in 8 made it to 65. And they had the good grace to go ahead and quickly die and get out of the workforce.
Darn so medical establishment anyway.
Yeah. And so now all of a sudden people are living longer. And what is our retirement age? Of course, they've jacked it up. They've changed it all dramatically on Social Security. No, you can still actually get a Social Security check at age 62.
Yep.
With life expectancies over 90. And there's nobody in the medical field that doesn't think we're heading fast to over 100. Fast, because we're just solving every single medical problem. And the longer you live, the more certain you're going to get your that we're going to be paying you a Social Security check the next month, because people aren't dying and we haven't changed a thing. So now we have more outflow and more Medicare. We got to expand Medicare, of course. And so we have these tremendous costs are going to be borne by the working younger people. And
well,
we just have no ability to pay for
it. And a $300 check each month for people, for each child you have.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nuts. We're running headlong into government care for all people, and that, of course, is intentional, and I believe frightening for the outlook for the United States and our economy, and actually the health of the country in general.
Yeah, the historical quotes said bread and circuses, and then Marie Antoinette let them eat cake.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Well, we just got to sit back and. Let's be happy anyway. I got a fine young man down in San Antonio learning how to be a registered nurse, getting paid for it by the Army. So.
There you go. That's the other thing, too, that I have really come to appreciate, I think, in the last few years, is how many great young people there are out there. This generation is not toast. There are still great, hardworking people out there, and they're going to be the ones running the country in the future. So. Let's thank God that there are a few still coming around. So it's not hopeless at all. It's frustrating. And when we continue to divide, that is a very bad plan going forward. So Terry, I do agree with you. CPI is good enough. Let's just live with it and quit trying to, if you will, divide everybody, not just by race, not by sex, but now by age too.
I'd like to divide them by attitude.
Yeah, there you go. I like it.
All right. Well, you have a good tournament, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for your call. You have a great day.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye now. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetzoFinancial.net. We're going to take a break here for Fox News. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436, 580-KIDO. That's our number. Let's go to the phones. Jim, how are you? Jim, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
There you go. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Fire away, buddy.
Me? Yeah, I wanted to extend on what you and Terry were talking about how basically Social Security and Medicare were set up when nobody would live past a certain date anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And we have been able to live much longer thanks to technology, which you always claim, you love that, because technology, Apple, et cetera, will help everybody live longer. But we also realize we can't afford it. And so basically, we can't make changes, but we don't want to make changes. So all we can do is just kick the can down the road. We just got to admit that maybe we'll go bankrupt eventually, but that's the way it is. So it's just kind of a hypocritical thing, but, how are we going to afford people that are going to be non-productive for 40 or 50 years?
Amen. I agree with that. That's a really big problem. It most certainly is, and we won't deal with it. We won't deal with future problems. And I believe that the answer to doing that is that we have to capture something of what we were as a great nation at one time. Even in my childhood, we still thought about future generations. We openly dialogued about future generations, and not in a way of control like teachers' unions do, right? which is, I'm not, this is not a left-wing, right-wing discussion. Teachers' unions are evil. They're awful. They literally don't want charter schools in the inner city. You know, they're the only schools that work. And so they put their own interests above minority children. I don't know how else to express it. It's absolute BS. And so when we let that type of thought process in, it permeates our society. And it's not just there. It's lots of places. This, to me, is just one of the biggest things. Their literal job as teachers is to teach the youth about tomorrow. And so they don't do that as well as they should. That's insane, and it's throughout our society. So this is not just a bash on the teachers' unions in the big cities. It's saying this is our societal issue. We used to think about our kids and grandkids, not just ours. We're talking about the whole country. If we can change that dialogue, right? I don't expect us to become the next greatest generation, but to some degree, we need to be thinking about those that come after us and not just getting my stuff. And that's not just meaning climate control and things like that. That's about power. That's not about climate control. It's about power again. So if we are really going to be honest about this, we need to care about the deficits we pile on to the future generations. We have to start dealing with Social Security. But none of that will happen because nobody has the political will unless we change the narrative in our country about caring about future generations and what we're doing.
Well, you know, one interesting thing is, like, when the Constitution was written and everything, like 1776, and certain things were the way they were back then, and then you have certain principles that you say, you know, won't die, you know, independence, freedom, and so and so, but then you have the current, the way things are going, you know. I mean, they didn't have technology, everything from AK-47s to computers back then. And so, I don't know. Then you got to say, well, we want to keep freedom and everything, but there's all sorts of various other variables that we got to deal with these days.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, and I don't know. The only thing you can say is it's the younger generation, and they've got to deal with it, be it good, bad, or otherwise.
And the other generations that are not born yet. So I think that it is something that we have a responsibility as leaders in the world, because children are not leaders, not yet. They're the future leaders, but the leaders of today, us, we need to be thinking about them. Not just I love my grandkids. I've never met anybody that didn't love their grandkids, that care enormously about their grandkids. But as a society, we obviously don't care about our grandkids. We obviously don't. We couldn't give a rip. I just want my stuff now. I don't ever want to see another recession. Just print more money. I don't ever want to see a Social Security check that I have to wait for till I'm 75 or 80, which would be a smarter design than what we have today.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, a lot of stuff is theory, you know. I mean, economics is theory. It's kind of like... so-and-so is bad, but basically people have got to be shown the bad, and it's like the frog in water, you know. It may be bad, but over a long period of time, people don't know it's bad.
Well, that's I think what we're dealing with now. I'm asked all the time, what about the budget deficit? I mean, all the time. It's almost a daily discussion. We got too much in deficit. When is that going to hurt the U.S. dollar, right?
Right, and so far the inflation and all the bad things have not actually happened yet.
Correct. Right. Correct. And it is like boiling water. So why do I think it's going to boiling a frog in water? So it's a great analogy. And again, Jim, I don't want to frighten people because that's just doesn't make any sense to me. Number one. Number two, the markets are fine. We're reopening. Things are good. There is no reason to think that tomorrow inflation is going to take off. But we can't keep doing this. We cannot keep doing this. There is an end point. And so to your analogy there, the frog at some point is going to die, and it will be boiled alive. But right now, I just don't see it being an imminent problem.
Yep. You know, sometimes I wonder, you know, if you could only ask God, you know. I mean, God is the only one that knows. Mm-hmm. God could only he's the only one that could put stuff together and you know, over a long period of time and say, yeah, here's where you went wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, if people could, you know, if there was a particular point saying, okay, here's where you screwed up.
Right.
But, I mean, I agree with equities. Corporations are the only hedge against inflation.
Yep.
However high prices get, they'll just charge more. So.
Well, I'm sure that there's a gold bug out there is screaming and yelling at the radio right now that gold is the great inflation hedge. The only thing that has ever held its value all through history is gold.
Well, thanks to my father, who bought some gold from the Krugerrands back in the early 80s, I'm covered on that basis.
There you go.
So I don't have to worry about buying gold. So I'm well diversified everywhere.
You know, I don't even have a bunker and gobs of ammunition or an AK-47. Proper diversification, that's for
I've
sure.
I've got a couple of crossbows and a little .22 revolver.
Well, that sounds
that
like
I've never
more
put
fun.
A bullet into.
All right. Thank you so much for your call. You have a great rest of the
Take
day,
care.
Okay?
Thanks. And keep ducking the old golf ball.
I will. I'll keep my head down.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
And our number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. And also, if you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Final break this hour, give us a call. Our lines are open. dave@petsofinancial.net. All right. If you want to give us a call, please do. Again, obviously, we're flip-flopping today's program, or did already, and we are live now, and we are going to have a recording at the back half of today's program. So stick around for that. If you were looking for Monday's interview with Kevin, I never know what Kevin's going to bring up. That's a true story. Never do. Never do. He never tells me. So all I know is it's fun to talk and fun to be engaged, and I better get up and get a cup of coffee because I got to get that brain going. I don't know what's coming. I got to share something with you, and I don't like to do this. We did it YouTube video on our website to talk about what an equity indexed annuity really is. I'm going to leave some of the details off, but once in a while, in comes somebody with a old equity indexed annuity. And again, go to our website. It's there. You can see it. You can also get it on YouTube. In about 12 minutes, I try my best to explain something that's incredibly difficult to understand, but why these equity indexed annuities will not work. They do not work. And because they are not covered by securities laws or fiduciary arrangements, they can basically say what they want and do. And talk about getting market returns without market risk. And the truth is, the product is designed to lose no money. That's true, assuming the insurance company stays in business. I'm not saying that that's a long shot assumption, but it certainly does have its own risks as well. But let's assume that the risk is that you have no risk of downside. What we're always hearing about is a Wall Street casino. We're always hearing about getting market returns with no risk. And it's just not true. It is true that if the market goes down, these products do not. But it is also equally true that when the market goes up, these products do not either. They have caps. And I'm not going to try to explain all of that now, but I'm just going to tell you how bad this can be. I'm looking at an annual statement from the beginning of 2020 to 2021. This is an actual product. Just to let you know what the market did in 2020, it went up 17%. Not too many numbers to follow, trust me on this. 17%. This product went up 0.7%. 0.7, less than 1%. Less than 1 due to the weird way the caps work. 0.7. If somebody comes in and says, okay, I'm going to take a 10% commission, which is what this product pays, how do I know that? Because it has a 10% early withdrawal the first year. A 10% commission, or a 7, or an 8, is too much. But you take a 7, 8, 10% commission out, of a product. And I promise you, you cannot take your money out for 10 years as a 10-year surrender charge. You have no liquidity on this, and you will earn less than 1% when the market goes up. If that is the sales pitch and somebody says, I'm signing up for that stuff, I'm okay with that. But the idea that this product has market participation is absurd. It's obscene. It's a lie. It's a con. These people are con artists. They're crooks. And yes, I said it. 17% for the S&P 500, it does 0.7, but we're going to hear about this all the time, how you get market participation with no risk, and the market is some kind of casino. Stay away from these products. I don't want to get wound up about it. I'm sorry, I'm all wound up. I can feel my blood pressure rise. This is a problem out here. If you see this type of thing happening to your parents, your neighbor, your grandparents, they don't understand. They just are afraid. And these disclosures, I know, it doesn't make any sense. It's like, how come you can sell a house? You can't sell a house with known problems, but you can sell an annuity to old people with known problems. It won't work. I'm looking at a real-life example in front of me. They all work the same. They all work the same. This is only a one-year snapshot. This product, thank the Lord, is now getting close to where they can actually take their money out without hideous penalties. You're right. It's earned less than 2% over the last 9 years in a market that has gone up 253%. 253%. Unbelievable. All right, let's go on to something happier. I just want to again say, get out there to our website if you don't know anything about it. Invest 12 minutes if you're even thinking about an equity indexed annuity. It's terrible stuff. Horrible stuff. All right, one more time. Our number here is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. It's Dave at PetsoFinancial.net. I'd like to touch on an email that I got yesterday, and because it was offered also to use for the show. I can't be real specific on this, but I want to use it anyway because this is so common, right? I sold my house. We're rebuilding. It's going to take some time, but I'm not going to need the money. Or I sold a business. I've got $500,000, and I don't have to pay taxes until, you know, next April or whatever. What can I do with the cash to earn the inflation rate? In a zero interest world, it's a problem. And so when we talk about you can go out there and you could do this or you could do that, you're talking about fractions of a percent. And really, as we look at it, there are alternatives if you're willing to take some risk. Now, I don't mean high risk. It might be phrased something broadly like this. If you feel like, you know, if we look at history, 95% of the time we expect X to happen, but 5% of the time Y could happen, and that would mean a loss of X percent, right? Some small amount. If we can understand that and wrap our mind around it, we're not making a prediction. We're simply saying, if I did this 20 times, 19 times, it's going to work exactly like I think, and one time it's not going to be that good. But can I handle the not that good? I mean, if you're wiped out, you can't do that. But can it go down 5%? That's the kind of discussion you want to have. And think about what makes sense for what your risk tolerance is and how much of that money you actually need. If, for example, let's say you sold a business for $500,000, you're not going to need all of that for taxes, right? So we maybe think of it in terms of how much downside can you actually handle in that period of time. So when you're thinking about things like this, it's not a all or none type of an equation. It's a you, and there's not one right answer. Are you willing to do it if you fully understand the risks of what you're doing, the liquidity of what you're in, and then you can move forward with knowing what your risks really are? And of course, none of us knows the ultimate risk. Like, you know, what if the whole economy caves in? I can't help you there. Nobody can help you there. It's the world is, you know, we have to make some assumptions, right? So I thought it was a fascinating, does this make sense to go do? But the answer is it's a lot longer discussion, isn't it? When we have to turn it around and we have to think in terms of, here is, in fact, what your downside risk is and weigh it out. Is that going to work for you? Okay? All right. Listen, I enjoyed this, getting off to a fast start today, talking about GDP and things like that. We've got more to come in the second hour, and we're going to talk about, of course, we're going to talk about what we did in the first hour, which is inflation valuations. But as I promised, we've got where the markets are really wrong and the commentators are really off and how to spot that. All right, we'll talk about that right after Fox News, top of the hour. Thanks for joining us. Hour two coming up next. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hour number two upcoming, and this hour is going to be a little different. We'll be here for about 28 minutes, and then the recording that Kevin and I do on Mondays will be playing after that. So if you have any comments, questions, fire them away. Give us a call at 580-KIDO. And, of course, these are my opinions and my opinions only, and we're not here to tell you what to buy, 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 and sell, sell, sell. In fact, we are the opposite of that. Long-term buy and hold works. It does. And yes, you have to make changes from time to time. The world is changing. Technology is improving. And this is one of the things that I think people about inflation and everything, we miss so much. Remember, I told you I'd kind of touch back on all of those worries that people have now. Valuations are too high. Inflation is coming back. Inflation, if you will, many of the problems out there are solved all the time by technology. All the time. The cost of everything keeps coming down. So, well, it costs more for a tomato. Okay, but it really doesn't cost that much more. Everything's getting better, more nutritious. All the things that you want to think about, right? Some things do because they still take up room. But do I think the price of a tomato is out of control? No, I don't. I don't. It may be the price of automobiles right now is out of control, but we'll fix that because the actual cost of automobiles has gone down my whole life. Certainly. And like, no, when you were a kid, there was $5,000 for a brand new car. Okay. And that car went 50,000 miles and needed a new engine. Now it goes 250,000 miles or it goes 50 and you want a new car because we have so much abundance. We just buy a new car. But it's not because it needs a new engine. Everything has better. I mean, we think about this. The technology, we don't even think about it in areas like energy. We don't think about what fracking has done to make the United States of America the Saudi Arabia of natural gas. That's a huge thing. We just go, oh, yeah, but. No, this is a huge thing. We are energy independent. I know Joe is trying to screw that up. It's a bad policy. We don't need to have barrels of oil coming across the oceans to the United States. We have it here. Shutting it down here will not diminish one barrel of oil usage. It just means that the bad guys will get it. And we have a bigger carbon footprint to get it here. It's asinine. It's off the rails. But so do I think that policy will stay? No, I don't. I think that the Democrats in Pennsylvania, for example, that have been living in and politicking in areas where fracking has made people rich and the government coffers full are in real trouble under Joe's genius policy. Policies change. We can't hang on to them all the time. But anyway, back to the technology part. That was technology. So technology made it possible to get natural gas and oil from places we couldn't before. And prices declined dramatically. We get more out of a barrel of oil with everything, whether it's an airplane, a car, everything, than we ever did before. Driving costs down all the time. And the problems that are insurmountable. Like COVID-19 are solved in a year with vaccines. It's incredible what we've done on in every place. And robotics and artificial intelligence, they scare me too, by the way, okay? That's unbelievable what it's going to do to solve a lot of today's problems and bring on more and new and interesting social problems, to say the least. But we can't forget about how big technology is. And I'm not going to say economists are stupid. They mostly get things wrong. But that's because we keep borrowing from the same playbook that, by golly, this is how the economy works because that's what I was taught in college. And I never really open up my eyes and see what is before me. Some call it common sense, but we do have to adjust. It doesn't mean you throw away everything you know. It means we have to adjust to it. Let me give you a quick example, a quick aside here, okay? So for years, you've heard me talk about the fact that a 60-40 portfolio, meaning 60% stocks, 40% bonds, is broken. That you cannot do that and draw income in a portfolio. You can't. It's not possible. It won't work. 1.3% 10-year treasuries says it won't work. You can't put 40% of your money in a portfolio and take 4% out with a 3% cost of living increase if you're earning 1.3 on 40% of it. I'm pretty sure you don't need to run a lot of spreadsheets on this. I would call it common sense, and it's obvious to a third grader that it won't work. Yet we still teach it. That's how you do it. We'd call them Monte Carlo simulations. What's the hypothetical real rate of return you can draw out? 4%. It's the rule of four. It's the rule, man. We got to do things differently. It doesn't mean you're guessing what the future is. The future is now, and it's in front of you, and you're earning 1.3. Will that work? No. Then find another solution. Don't tell me what you learned for the last 30 or 40 years, because it's wrong. All right, so we take that and we look at this and we say, what in the world is going on with inflation, right? So give economists a break. It's changing, but and we are hearing smart people talk about it. They're putting it in their models, which is really saying, if we're driving down the cost of microchips, making things faster, better, cheaper than ever before, then how does that look when we have too much money around, or like we do now with 30% money supply growth? All of those questions some are trying to figure it out. But what you and I can know is that whatever inflation number that people are predicting is wrong. It's too high because it's based on a model that's flawed. I don't know how much too high. It's just too high. Does that make sense? We know directionally that things are getting less expensive in almost everything we do. Let me give you another quick example. Let's say, for example, you were in the pandemic and you needed to see a doctor. You couldn't go see your doctor, so what did you do? You had a Zoom chat with them, a teledoc. And what did that happen if something came up that was really intense? What did they do? Maybe your doctors had consultations with doctors somewhere else in the world and sent your data to them for suggestions on care. Do we think that's only going to be 20% of the office visits going forward? I don't. I think that's crazy. But I want to see my doctor. Yeah, me too. But if it's a quick thing, doesn't it make sense to talk to a doctor or a nurse? Of course it does. Of course it does. And do I think that that is going to bend the cost curve a little bit? Yeah. And so are medicines, et cetera. So to sit there and extrapolate that cost of healthcare is going to go up 10% a year, I'm not sure it is. I don't know what the number is, but I think that's too high. That's what I'm saying. They're trying to get their mind wrapped around. Not to be precise, because we don't have to be. But we have to think through some of the things that are changing. And it doesn't mean that those things that are changing, that we have to put an exact number on, or we're not right. It's a directional issue. Directionally, are we moving the right way, the wrong way? That's what we've got to be thinking about, okay? All right, I have to take a quick break. Our number is 580-5436-580-KIDO. And when we come back, we'll talk about the number one babble that's incorrect going on around here. We'll talk to you after the break. Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. We have time for a quick call. If you do want to ring us up, it's 580-5436-580-KIDO. Terry, thank you for sending me that article on technology improvements and all. I'll have some time this weekend and read all the way through it. So thank you for sending that. Appreciate it. And I appreciate all that when people send things along as a heads up or could you please talk about this or that. Okay. So we do. All right. So I've been talking about this, and this is super important, super important for us to understand when we're listening to the daily babble. And I know lots of people I talk to, well, I don't listen to this or I don't listen to that. I hardly ever listen to news and stuff. Good for you, because news is not news. It's historic report of what happened already. It's not new. So it's already happened, number one. Number two, it's often hyperbolic, so always is, so that they can get your attention. It's 90%+ negative. That's not what the world is. It's not 90% negative. So if you want a really distorted picture of what's going on, watch the news a lot. It'll help really distort that picture. So now, having said that, one of the things that is always talked about, and I mentioned this a couple years ago because everybody was sure interest rates were going to rise. And I'm telling you, the chief economist for, I know, chief spokesman, he's not actually a chief economist, but David Kelly is his name, was out there blabbering on CNBC, blabbering about how rising interest rates were bad for stocks. So that was one of their concerns going forward because interest rates were rising. Then, literally, J.P. Morgan comes out with a piece that proves how absolutely absurd that is. Interest rates rising is, in fact, not bad for stocks. It's good for stocks. Stocks and rising interest rates go together, you say? Yes, they do. Sometimes. How's that for a political answer for you? A politician's perfect answer. Sometimes, sometimes not. But here is the reasoning and why. When we are at super low interest rates like we are now, and rates rise, historically, that's meant the economy is growing. Very good for stocks. Excellent for stocks. Economy rising, good for stocks. Makes sense, doesn't it? So stocks go up. But if interest rates are already higher and going higher, that's bad for stocks. Why? Because that would be inflationary. It means the interest rates are already pretty high, and if they're going higher, we're dealing with some pretty high inflation, and that is not good for stocks. It's not good for anything. It's worse for bonds, of course, but it's not good. So it kind of sort of makes sense, but here's what happens. Interest rates rising is not good for stocks. Back to you, Bob, at the studio. That's what's reported. So what happened in the market today? Well, with interest rates rising today, stocks took it on the chin. Inflation concerns, rising interest rates, stocks decline. That's what you hear every single day, that inflation might be the number. Or let's say rising interest rates, then the traders go, here's the reason of the day. Okay, this is the reason we moved 0.13% today. It's worries about inflation. And then it spreads across the floor, and that's what the news is. And they just babble about it. And then you just look at the data and you go, these babbling hyenas are saying nothing that is helpful. In fact, is not true. It's not true what they're saying, because on a one-day basis, we don't really know why the market would go up or down 0.13%. We don't know. There is no reason. It just did, because that's not exactly a move. But we always want to equate, why is the sky blue, Dad? Why are there ants? Why are there mosquitoes? Lots of things don't have an answer, right? I don't know why there's a mosquito. It seems kind of a nasty little critter, but God thought there was a good reason for a mosquito. So why does the market go up or down 0.13%? There isn't a reason. It just did. More buyers, more sellers. That's it. No reason. But we have to tag this all the time. Maybe it's our human nature. But what it does is it leads to this constant struggle for trying to find the why, and therefore then go to the next level, which is the prediction. And we dig ourselves deeper and deeper and deeper in this hole, and sometimes often misunderstood. Rising interest rates is bad for stocks. No, actually, it's not. It's not. Interest rates have risen over the past 2 years. Right now, they're declining from a recent high of around 2% back to 1.3, but we were at 0.5. That's a lot higher at 1.3 than we were at 0.5. A lot higher. How'd stocks do? Well, they went up. Again, for the umpteenth time in a rising interest rate environment, stocks went up. But what do you hear? Rising interest rates are bad for stocks. Not true. How many other things are not true that they tell you? I'll give you one more. You can't go broke on Wall Street taking profits. Well, that's a factual statement and completely false. Nobody has profits all the time. So if you sell profits, you're going to make money on that trade. The problem is nobody, and I mean nobody, always picks profitable investments. In fact, John Templeton said it best, and remember, he beat the market by 5 percentage points per year. Not for a year, not for five, not for 10, for 30 years. Five a year is like millions versus only a million. It's a lot. It's a lot. He said, if we're right 65% of the time, we're legendary. That's an awesome statement. What I mean by this is you have to understand that sometimes a company is right in your face. You see an iPhone for the first time. 12 years ago. I did. And it looks amazing. It's intuitive. I can use it. I don't need a PhD. I don't need to be a techie. I can use it. I can't use the Crackberry in my pocket. It's hopelessly bad. It's really only good for a phone call, but it pretends to do other things. This one doesn't. That was 30-fold ago in Apple stock. 30. So how many times should I have sold it because Apple's outlook wasn't as good? Because it wasn't as good. How many times should I have gotten rid of it when the Apple III wasn't as good as the 4? Or it was better than the 4? But they're going to switch it anyway. And nobody's going to pay $1,000 for a stupid phone to put in their pocket. Or are they? How many analysts, geniuses, well, we could have sold that off. And now you see we have to have 30 baggers to cover up for the not-so-good ones. I don't think you need 30 baggers, but like Peter Lynch said, the famous fund manager himself, you need to have some 10 baggers in your portfolio to really do well. We got to let our winners run. Don't be trading like you're in a casino. It's a different ball game. Don't have that mentality. Own great corporations, and you're going to do great. Own them for the long haul. That's how you get the 10% a year in total. Thanks for joining, everybody. Enjoy this recording with Kevin. Have a great rest of the weekend. I'll talk to you next week.